Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, September 21st, 2018. South Sudan's vice president says education is the key to peace.
Because SCPs, our civil population, are killing themselves. Also, easy accessibility to arms or proliferation of arms. When it is easy to get guns, then it is easy to go to the bush.
And the ENAF project says the revitalized peace deal does not address the drivers of conflict in South Sudan.
If there's anything that's even constant in South Sudan, it's that history repeats itself. We get into short-term deals that satisfy short-term inclinations. We don't look at the big picture. We don't look 10 years down the road. What are the implications?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The ENAF project says the revitalized peace agreement will not change the situation in South Sudan. The Washington-based group released a new report in which its authors say there must be transparency and measures to end corruption before any real change takes place in South Sudan. Ayen Deng Bior has more from Washington.
In a new report, the ENAF project says power-sharing agreements in South Sudan are inadequate short-term fixes for underlying systematic challenges to governance. This month's peace deal signing and the events that led up to it point to a South Sudanese history that seems to repeat itself, according to Brian Adeba, Deputy Director of Policy at the ENAF project.
If there's anything that's even constant in South Sudan, it's that history repeats itself. We get into short-term deals that satisfy short-term inclinations. We don't look at the big picture. We don't look 10 years down the road. What are the implications? What are the implications of corruption going down the line 5 years from now? Is South Sudan going to recede further in the list of corrupt countries? Is development going to recede further?
According to the new ENAF project report, leaders did not do enough to make sure that corrupt officials were brought to justice. Adeba says corruption is another red flag that is central to the conflict. Specifically, he says, there is a lack of transparency in how the oil revenues are managed. But several steps can be taken to curtail corruption in South Sudan's largest revenue stream.
For instance, we say oil revenues. I mean, one can take steps to make transparency evident in this, in how oil revenues are spent, by involving a large sector of the people of South Sudan in oversight. So you would want to have civil society so that everyone knows what's happening with the money. You would want to have parliamentary committees deeply involved in oversight on this money. You would want to have members of the clergy, maybe different sectors of South Sudanese society involved in oversight of the money, and ensuring also that accountability really takes place, and those who abuse government money, public money, are held accountable for their actions.
The region has been credited with playing a role in the revitalized agreement, but Adeba says South Sudan's leaders should be aware that its neighbors are personally motivated.
Uganda really wants this deal to secure South Sudan as an economic, pot for its own needs. South Sudan, Ugandan goods are going to be, Uganda is going to be the main beneficiary of a deal because, there is no production at all in South Sudan at the moment. Everything, including food, sometimes is imported, and Uganda wants that.
An inclusive and transparent peace process that addresses corruption and includes diverse voices could go a long way in ensuring that past mistakes are not repeated, according to Adeba. Ayen Deng Bior, VOA News, Washington.
South Sudan's Vice President James Wani Iga says a cycle of violence exists in South Sudan largely because many people are illiterate. He says educating South Sudanese about peace will be the government's top priority heading into the transitional period of implementing the revitalized peace deal. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
Speaking at an event to commemorate the International Day of Peace in Juba today, Wani said, education is the only thing that will end the culture of violence in South Sudan.
It is when this high illiteracy comes down that it will be easy to govern people. So this is one of the main causes. We don't look for other causes. So intensifying education. By ikun dahil talim da ikun indina curriculum, what we call adopted curriculum, that target and culminating in building peace, knowledge, skills, and attitudes that will allow people of all ages and levels to develop behavioral changes.
Exactly 1 month ago, South Sudanese lawmakers passed a 2018-2019 federal budget, which doubles the size of the current budget, but only allocates 10% of it for general and university-level education. Wani says many South Sudanese are easily misled by dubious politicians because they are not educated and end up becoming part of the culture of war.
South Sudan has developed a kind of bad cancer of company, cancer of war. From the war of Anyanyawan, then we have our war of the SDLM, and this was justified because it was a noble cause. But thereafter, all these other conflicts are really uncovered. This we have to undo.
President Salva Kiir, SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar, and other opposition leaders signed a revitalized peace deal last week to end the nearly five-year conflict. But spokesmen for both rebel and government forces have acknowledged that deadly fighting occurred in parts of the country just days after the deal was signed. Wani says the answer is disarming citizens of their weapons.
Number one we will have to do is disarmament. That means this will lead to destroying some weapons, especially if we disarm our civil population. Because as it is, our civil population are killing themselves. Also, easy accessibility to arms or proliferation of arms. When it is easy to get guns, then it is easy to go to the bush because the guns are already there. This is why we have to disarm.
Wani is calling on South Sudanese to shun tribalism and avoid hate speech to achieve peace and reconciliation in the country. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
Still on matters to do with peace, the United States, Britain and Norway released a joint statement earlier this month expressing concern about South Sudan's revitalized peace agreement. Ambassador Chris Trout is the UK Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan, and he is with me in Studio 14. Ambassador, thank you very much for agreeing to be with us on this show.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here today.
The United Kingdom invested time and money in the search for peace in South Sudan. Why are you expressing concern about the revitalized peace agreement?
I think I don't want to start this interview by disagreeing with you, but what I would like to say is that our concern is not about the revitalized agreement. Our concern has been all the way through the negotiation process the sincerity with which the parties are addressing the conflict. And what we're particularly keen to see is demonstrations from the parties now that they are going to live up to the commitments that they have made. And in particular, our focus has been on the cessation of hostilities agreement that was signed last December. Our feeling is that there has been ample opportunity for the parties, through adherence to the cessation of hostilities agreement, to demonstrate that they're going to really address the crisis seriously. And we've continually called on the parties to stop the fighting, to allow humanitarian access, to give the space to civil society and to the media that was guaranteed in that agreement in December. And as yet, we've not seen that agreement fully implemented. And so if that agreement's not been fully implemented, our concern is, will this new agreement be fully implemented?
Yeah, your role, among other things, is to address internal conflicts and encouraging sustainable development in Sudan and South Sudan. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So what we've sought to do is to try and build bridges between the different parties. We're conscious of the fact that when there is a conflict going on in a country, it's very hard for dialogue to start. And what we've always wanted to do, particularly in the context of South Sudan, but actually it applies also in Sudan, is to ensure that the dialogue about the future of the country is an exclusive one in which people are able to genuinely express their desires about what the country should look like in 5, 10, 15 years' time. And my role as an envoy has been to try and help facilitate that, working in the Sudanese case to the AU High Level Implementation Panel, which is still playing a role in trying to bring peace to Sudan, and in the context of South Sudan, to be working with IGAD and the IGAD negotiation or mediation team to try and take this forward.
And the South Sudan government, especially some senior officials from the government, let's take a case of the spokesperson of the government of South Sudan, that is Information Minister Michael Makui, was on record last week asking the international community to support the government to implement the revitalized peace agreement. What is your response to this appeal?
I am absolutely committed to supporting the implementation of a peace agreement, of the peace agreement. I think that what we need to do is to ensure that we support not just the government, but all the parties, including civil society, in the implementation of this agreement. And actually, this is why I'm here in the United States right now, is to talk to the US government. I'm here with my Norwegian counterpart, and we're talking about how the international community can work together to ensure that this time the agreement is implemented in the way that it has been designed to do. Because unfortunately, in 2015, the agreement was very good, but it was never implemented. And we want to try and ensure that this time the things are different.
And you listened to the Deputy Director for Policy at Enough Project, who was saying that, look, things in South Sudan are just done the same way over and over again. There's nothing new. There's the issue of transparency and accountability. Is the international community keen on that?
Absolutely. We're very keen on that. And we've made it very clear in our conversations about the current peace agreement. The way that we make this agreement sustainable is by ensuring that there is transparency around the agreement, transparency around the way in which a transitional government operates, transparency around the spending of the revenue of the government of South Sudan, which needs to be in support of the ordinary people of South Sudan. And therefore, you know, we're looking for a partnership that helps bring about that transparency.
All right, Ambassador, we'll come back to that. Just hold your thoughts on some of these issues to do with transparency. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we'll bring more updates on Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how did your parents choose your name?
Barbara was given to me by an auntie. My day name is Akosua, meaning I was born on a Sunday.
My parents chose the name, they call me Mabruk. So this name, my father was an old man, so he married a money wife. So my mother is a last wife to him. So after he born me, he gave me this name, Mabruk. So Mabruk means congratulations.
Okay, my parents choose my name. For example, I'm called Alaka Rose. Rose is a family name which my parents gave me. And the meaning of Alaka is someone who was born while the father is already died.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. The World Health Organization reports sustainable progress is being made in containing the spread of Ebola virus in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. It warns, however, that new hotspots are appearing. The WHO says the number of confirmed and probable cases of Ebola in Congo stands at 143, including 97 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
WHO officials say they are pleased with the progress being made in limiting the spread of the Ebola virus, but that the outbreak of this fatal disease in Congo's conflict-ridden North Kivu and Ituri provinces remains active and vigilance must be maintained. WHO reports the situation in Mangina, the initial epicenter of the epidemic in North Kivu, is stabilizing. WHO spokeswoman Fadela Shaib tells VOA there are no security problems there, so health workers are able to safely access the area and treat those affected by the disease.
But immediately to the east is an inaccessible area. This region is in security level 4. which is one of the highest in the UN security phasing system. For example, the road from Beni to Oicha is in the red zone. So in some places we are really able to move to work. In some other places it's more difficult.
Shaib says the cities of Beni and Butembo have become the new hotspots. She notes Butembo is in the red zone. The WHO spokeswoman says there is significant risk that Ebola could spread there, and health workers have to remain on top of the many challenges facing them. Among the challenges is a growing resistance in some communities to measures used to contain the virus. For example, Shaib says, some people are reluctant to go to treatment centers for care. Others are unwilling to change traditional burial practices, such as touching the bodies of those who have died from Ebola. WHO warns this is one of the surest ways of spreading the infection. The outbreak in the DRC is the 10th since Ebola was first identified in 1976. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we move back to Juba, where South Sudan is hosting the 12th meeting of East African Community Lawmakers Forum in Juba. The lawmakers are discussing free movement of people and trade in East Africa. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
Rebecca Kadaga, the Speaker of Uganda's Parliament, says EAC member states must respect the rights of workers from other member countries.
We want to call upon all of us to facilitate the free movement of labor, skills and capital according to our treaty so that the youth of East Africa can work anywhere in this region. I also need to mention that there continue to be a number of non-tariff barriers to trade.
EAC representatives also talked about insecurity within the region. Bernard Makuza, the Speaker of Rwanda's Parliament, says EAC governments must come up with homegrown solutions to combat instability in the region.
Today, more than ever, cooperation is not a choice, but rather an imperative in real terms. Solutions to political crisis or conflict call for cooperation and support of neighbors and friends, or for collective action to resolve them within regional frameworks, partner states. Ongoing peace processes in our region are an opportunity to reflect on the necessity to build capacities to prevent and, when needed, to resolve disputes ourselves, rather outsource solutions.
Regional lawmakers from Uganda, Rwanda, Kenya, Tanzania, Burundi, and South Sudan all agreed that the time has come to fully integrate the region. But Nyonga Karoli Martin, Speaker of the East African Legislative Assembly, says more funding is needed to accomplish that goal.
The e-passports were launched by the East African Community and the partner states and have already commenced the rollout. We have exactly a year to the date set for the globe to fully embrace the e-passports. As parliaments, it is perhaps necessary to create awareness on the aspect, but also to appropriate some additional resources in that area. About the challenges, the main challenge we face is funding. The community is approaching the red line.
Martin says some member states are still reluctant to implement certain measures like e-passports. He says this is partly because many citizens do not understand the benefits of living in an integrated community. But the East African Legislative Assembly, or EALA, hopes to change that.
We have made it a strategy in the fourth EALA to increase the time we spend in sensitization and to create more avenues to include more people such that we are able to create a critical mass of East Africans.
The heads of legislatures in the regional bloc praised South Sudan's warring parties for signing a revitalized peace deal, but also called on the country's leaders to see to it that the agreement is fully implemented. South Sudan Parliament Speaker Anthony Lino Makana says his government needs more time to implement some of the EAC objectives.
We discuss issues to do with the integration of East African community, Later we'll go to discuss issues to do with visa. Also, we elected Burundi to chair the Bureau of the Speakers of East Africa for this session. The next forum for the Speakers Bureau will be held in Burundi at a time to be determined. Then all the speakers are going to share with us. They are going to come here on the 2nd of December to the 14th of December for the Interparliamentary Games. It will be a very big event. They will be with us here for about 2 weeks.
This marks the first time South Sudan has hosted the Bureau meeting for speakers of parliaments of the East African Community member state since joining the East African Community in 2016. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
If you have just joined us, we are with Ambassador Chris Trout, UK's special envoy for Sudan and South Sudan. Ambassador Trout, I interrupted you when you were talking about the issues of transparency. Any additions there you would like to add?
No, I'm quite happy to move on. Thank you.
Yeah, the EU imposed sanction on some South Sudanese government officials. Talk to us more about the importance of sanctions.
I would start by saying that sanctions are not the tool of choice of the international community. I mean, what we really want to see happen in South Sudan is for the agreements that people have reached to be honoured, for the fighting to stop, for us to have humanitarian access. And sanctions are a tool, in a way, to demonstrate when people are blocking progress, when people are violating commitments that they themselves have freely entered into. It's a way of the international community registering our concern about the violations of the agreement and hopefully encouraging a change of behaviour to ensure that the aspirations of ordinary South Sudanese people for there to be peace in their country, for the international community to be able to support them when they've had to flee their homes or when they're living in camps, to enable us to ensure that those aspirations are met. So, yes, we will continue to look at the issue of sanctions. Yes, we will continue to say to the region that if you really want this peace agreement to stick, you need to demonstrate that people will be held accountable for the commitments that they've made. And so, yes, we are ready to use sanctions in order to help send that signal to the parties to ensure that the agreement stays on track. So it's a tool to support the peace process. It's not a tool that's designed just to punish.
And those who, to use your words, those who have been punished have accused Troika of attempting to topple the government of President Kiir. What is your comment on that?
I would say that's absolute nonsense. And we are not about regime change. And I have, in fact, said this to government officials myself, including His Excellency President Kiir. What we are seeking to do is to hold people accountable for the commitments they made. And we're seeking to ensure that the peace process has a chance to succeed. That is our dream. That is our hope. And I think your listeners in South Sudan share that hope with us.
And let's talk about some of the opposition leaders who refused to sign this revitalized peace agreement. What are your plans to reach out to these people? We're talking about the National Salvation Front and then the other groups like the People's Democratic Movement. They refused to sign the agreement. Are you reaching out to them?
Absolutely. We will continue to talk to the widest range of groups that are possible because we feel that all their concerns and their voices should be reflected in the agreement. I would say that the onus is not necessarily on us to persuade them to change their minds. The onus is on the other parties who have signed and the region to demonstrate why this is in their interests to sign up to. So what we encouraged in the statement that you referred to earlier in this interview in the summit that was held, the IGAD summit in Addis last week, was we encouraged the parties who were in the room to continue to talk to the parties who were not yet fully on board with the agreement and not yet ready to sign up to the peace process. Because we feel that we need to find ways to build them into the peace process so this becomes a peace process for the whole of South Sudan.
So you're talking about inclusivity here. And one of the key components of the agreement that IGAD was insisting on, that it has to be inclusive.
Yes, and I think that I should recognize the work that IGAD has done over the last 18 months in terms of driving forward first the high-level revitalization forum and then this peace agreement. I think they set out very clearly their aspiration to be inclusive. And we feel that they achieved that in a way that was very different from many of the previous agreements that have been reached to try and resolve the conflict in South Sudan. And so our hope is that the agreement that has been reached this time, as it is more inclusive, that increases the chances of it succeeding. And the bottom line for us is we want to see this agreement succeed. And we think that in order to do that, we need to be able to hold people to account for the commitments they make, and we need to be able to ensure that a dialogue continues amongst ordinary South Sudanese about the peace process.
All right, Ambassador Chris Trout, thanks for accepting to be on this show. I look forward to hosting you in future.
Thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure.
That was Ambassador Chris Trout, UK's Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan. Before he was appointed a special envoy, he served as ambassador in Senegal, Guinea-Bissau, Mali, Cape Verde. He also recently served as the British High Commissioner to the Solomon Islands. That brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with a peace song by Isaka Number One.
Zaman kelina pulu geni fowata wa wonu sobera Zaman kelina rija fekiri kan mushkila de bada minuel Zaman kelina manesitu nina lisa akwana Zaman kelina kulu arufo nina yaljuno Ashani yalbikore agato mondina gis So one di kore, rujeto mondi kalaso. Abo had di kore, iyalto mondi waduro. Jidoza tu di kore, gelbato obi waja. Shuno mina lisa bishakiru badon tana Ashan mono mina lisa biferigu badon tana Kalam shuno mina lisa bilak badunu fustana Kalam mono mina lisa bisulumu badon tana Kelina rija geni fuwata Wawonu soberaze akwana Elina rija geni fowata, owonu su kalaman salam. Elina rija geni fowata, wa afi baduntana. Elina rija geni fowata, wajibu salam. Generation is diminishing, generation is diminishing, for no reason. Population is decreasing, population is decreasing, for no reason. Generation is diminishing. Oh, na 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 na. Population is decreasing. Decreasing every day. There is no reason for me to feel like a stranger in my own country. There is no reason for me to run away and leave my own country. There is no reason for me to fight my own brother. We are blessed. We are blessed. I say we are blessed.
With the culture.
We are blessed. Missing say we are blessed.
With the good soil.
We are blessed. I say we are blessed.
With the river Nile.
We are blessed. We are blessed.
We have been listening to Isaka Number One with a song about peace. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Have a safe weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
This is my country.
I belong to this country.
Bebe lady.
Anina sabele.
Ni
this is my country.
I belong to this country.